I think the thing that maybe has held us back the most in terms of improving on biosecurity is that ability to sort of assess in a more comprehensive way, you know, where all the biosecurity hazards are. And then once you have enough information about that, then you can say, well, okay, we can prioritize these. You know, these are the things that we can't ignore any longer. These are the things that we'll get to when we get to them. And these are the things that would be nice to have, but we may never get to them, right? And so that's really the goal here, is to be able to gather enough information about where the biosecurity hazards are.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. AB Vista, new nutritional perspectives and novel enzyme applications to drive pig production. You can combat mycotoxins in your feed with Fumezyme from DSM Firmenich. Fumezyme is the only FDA-approved enzyme to degrade fumonisins. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Eastman works with you to accelerate your nutritional program innovation. Start your journey with us at eastman.com. Healthier pigs are good for producers, people, profits, and planet.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Swine It podcast. I'm Dr. Tara Donovan, your host today, and I'd like to introduce you to my guest, Dr. Darald Holdkamp. Darald is a professor of swine production medicine at Iowa State University. Welcome to our show, Darald. How are you?
Good. Glad to be here, Tara.
Great. Well, thank you for joining us today. So Dr. Holdkamp is a leader in the area of biosecurity and the development of a program for identifying biosecurity hazards and doing disease investigations. But before we dive into that today, Darald, I want you to just introduce yourself a little bit more to our guests and how you got where you are today.
Sure. So, yeah, I am a professor at the Iowa State University College of Vet Med. I joined there in 2006 and have primarily focused on biosecurity and maybe to a lesser extent the economics of animal disease. I try not to get too deeply involved with PRRS virus, but I seem to get pulled into that without fail. Before that, I have all my degrees from Iowa State University. I worked for Smithfield right out of vet school, and then a few startup companies. After that, before I landed back at Iowa State University, and even did a little private veterinary consulting in between there as well. So that's kind of my background. I grew up in Iowa. Kind of what I would describe as a hobby farm. My dad really didn't like pigs, and so I didn't get introduced to pigs until later in life. I grew up with cattle, but come with a farm background, I guess, as well there, Tara.
Great. Well, thank you for that. And I was kind of chuckling here when you said you've been pulled in to talk about PRRS a lot, because I don't think you can be in the space of biosecurity without discussing that virus, at least not in the U.S. So
Yeah. Yeah, it seems every time, when it's comes up that we may not have to worry about PRRS in the future, if, you know, with a gene-edited pig or this, you know, some other reason we might not need to worry about that, then it always crosses my mind, well, are we still going to worry about biosecurity? But I think we're safe there. The new one now is influenza. And so I think there's always going to be another disease come along to worry about biosecurity. So even if PRRS isn't a concern in the future, I think I'm still probably safe in that area.
Yeah, I agree.
Pigs are constantly threatened by the exposure of mycotoxins in their feed. Fumonisins are a highly prevalent mycotoxin that can impact health and performance. DSM Firmenich offers a range of analytical services to assess mycotoxin contamination and solutions to combat mycotoxins. One of these solutions is Fumezyme, the only FDA-approved enzyme to combat fumonisins. Visit dsmfirmenich.com/Fumezyme to learn more.
So, well, let's get started and talk about the a way to assess biosecurity and to, you know, help make some progress in that area. So disease outbreak investigations, there's a tool that you are instrumental in developing for the industry. And so let's talk about that and kind of give us a little bit of background of that particular tool, how it works, and then how we can use it.
Yeah, it goes back really, I would say, even before I started at Iowa State. Again, I was doing a little bit of consulting in the industry. And one of the things that we worked on was the Production Animal Disease Risk Assessment Program. And so, Tara, I think you probably remember that. But, you know, we put that together and put it out there, and it got used by a lot of veterinarians. It was pretty widely adopted. I used it a lot myself, had a lot of students complete those surveys for producers. And at the end of it, I consistently got the question of, well, so what do we do next, right? I mean, it had some nice benchmarking charts that showed where your strengths might be, but it didn't really do a good job of focusing on what I've come to call and understand as a biosecurity hazard, right? And something that you can actually implement a control measure to address. And so it was always a frustration for me. And so around the time, let's say around 2010 or a little bit after, I started thinking more about, you know, how we would answer that question better. And so I had directed my attention to outbreak investigations. I recognized those might be a good opportunity, you know, to learn more. And so kind of played around with that. And then in 2013, got some funding from the Iowa Pork Producers Association to develop a outbreak investigation instrument, we called it at that time, for PRRS virus, of course, specifically. And so I did that. And it was around 2013 then when I kind of got all that together. And then, of course, you know what happened in the U.S. In that year, that's when we got PED virus here. And so I had a chance to kind of test that on PED virus in real time there as well. And the National Pork Board was funding some of those outbreak investigations to be done. And I happened to do one, the last of, I think there was about six of those done total, all by different individuals, all veterinarians. But I had the opportunity at the end of that, Paul Sundberg asked me to summarize those and see if I could make some sense or kind of, you know, find some common themes among those. And so that was really a great experience from the standpoint of what I quickly recognized was that all six of those were done with very different approaches and very different, things that they looked at, right, or things that they focused on. And it was clear that there was not a standard way to do this. I already knew that, but what really struck me was how different they were, right? And it was just impossible to pull anything out of them that was very interesting. And so that was kind of frustrating for me. And so that's when I really started to think more in terms of, you know, if we could standardize how we do these as an industry and kind of approach them all the same, I think we could start to learn a lot faster and be a lot better at doing them. And it dawned on me that we don't really teach students. You and I probably didn't, or I know I didn't, I shouldn't speak for you, but I certainly didn't learn how to do that, good outbreak investigations in vet school. And so in my role at that time as an associate professor at that point, it really was something I felt like we needed. And so, you know, fast forward now, 2016, we got some funding from the Swine Health Information Center. Paul Sundberg moved over to that and was the director of that for many years until they just recently retired. And so he funded us to develop that in the context of what he just wanted to call a rapid response program and what we agreed with. And so we developed that. And the idea was that then we'd have this standard way of doing these and have some people trained to work on them or to do them in the event of another PED virus. And so that was really the motivation to do that. And the result of that then was in 2022, I believe it was, we put together a working group get input. And so it was made up of several veterinarians and we got input on the current version that we were working with and really kind of developed the terminology and the approach around that. and then pitch that to AASV as a standardized outbreak investigation program. And that passed, the AASV board approved that then in the spring of 2023 last year here. So that's kind of the history of that. And now we have a web-based program that we've developed and recently launched as well. And so now that's available to veterinarians and producers as well. We don't restrict it to veterinarians to sign up and start doing outbreak investigations through that program. And I can go ahead. I feel like I've talked too long there, Tara, but I can give you a little bit more background on that web app and how, you know, how that can be accessed as well here.
Yeah, let's go back just a little bit I like your, that's a great history of how that all evolved. And so there's really kind of two purposes, or as I see it, right? We had a tool to try to assess hazards and to work through improving biosecurity. And we started to do some investigations, maybe not as standardized when PED came about. And then we have new strains of PERS, right? New kind of epidemics, I would call them, all with PERS, that us as industry veterinarians out there, you know, in the field, we'd be like, is this a new virus? Is this not a new virus? It looks like it is. Why did it get in? Because we've done all this work. And so we use these this process for both, you know, kind of our endemic domestic diseases. But, you know, SHIT got involved really to make this a opportunity for us to use with a new introduction, right? And a way to look at, kind of like we did with PED, which was the assimilation of this, is how did it get in? How did it move? What can we learn about it? How can we keep it out? What are the attributes that are different, and what biosecurity areas are weaker for that virus to get in? So is that a good description? There's kind of two ways you can look at this as an opportunity for us in the U.S.
Yeah. So, you know, Tara, the way that I've evolved to look at this is, you know, I said before, I was always frustrated, you know, what do we do next, right? And so it really is, and I think the thing that maybe has held us back the most in terms of improving on biosecurity is that ability to sort of assess in a more comprehensive way, you know, where all the biosecurity hazards are. And then once you have enough information about that, then you can say, well, okay, we can prioritize these. You know, these are the things that we can't ignore any longer. These are the things that we'll get to when we get to them. And these are the things that would be nice to have, but we may never get to them, right? And so that's really the goal here, is to be able to gather enough information about where the biosecurity hazards are. And by the way, that biosecurity hazard is anything that can increase the probability of an outbreak happening. We have a little bit more detail around how we exactly define a hazard, but fundamentally that's what it is. So that, to me, that's what it's all about. It's about problem solving, right? And the right approach to problem solving is to identify the problem first, and then you go to solutions. And I think as an industry, we've tended to jump right to solutions without really spending a lot of time trying to identify where the big problems are.
Yeah, I think that's an accurate statement, and kind of to the same definitions. You know, we call those you know, kind of those tools to fix it our control measures, or measures to try to prevent it, right? To try to prevent that hazard. So specifically, we call those control measures. And it's funny, you know, I go to AASV and the meeting, and we talk about a new control measures. You know, all sorts of new control measures, whether those are for, you know, disinfecting products coming in, or, you know, stopping, you know, physical things like benches, et cetera. And sometimes we focus on all these new control measures that may or may not really be tested to be very good. and sometimes we don't go back to sitting down and saying, is this really the area that we should be focusing on as an industry? Because it may be lower on the list of priorities. But that's how we learn, and that's how we improve. And you know, we're innovators, and we just feel like we have to do something, right? And sometimes those hazards aren't something that the veterinarian can always fix very easily. And so we go to the things that we can fix, right? And we can give advice on. So sometimes it's a bit of the cart before the horse, but I think that's still an important way to learn as well. So no, not criticizing. It's just, it feels like, I think sometimes those high priority areas are going to be tougher to solve
Yeah, no, that's definitely true, Tara. And you know, I do find that there's typically a lot of low-hanging fruit as well, though. You know, you may not get the exact solution that you're hoping for immediately, because that would require maybe a large capital investment. But there often are problems that are that, you know, hazards that can be addressed with simpler, lower cost measures. So there's usually some low hanging fruit there.
Yeah, for sure. And unfortunately, it all takes a bit of time and effort to get a good solid biosecurity process, and we're human. And so there's some mistakes that happen and always improvement that can be made. So yeah, exactly. So let's talk about, prioritizing. How does the system work? How does the process work to help us prioritize in a farm and then also maybe as an industry?
Yeah. Good question, Tara. The way we approach this is stealing heavily from HACCP, the Hazard Analysis Critical Control Point that's used frequently in the food industry to identify hazards. But we look at what a hazard is a little bit differently. So we had to early on kind of redefine what we meant by a hazard in the context of biosecurity. And so we think about those in terms of three failures. And so there's a hazard then just simply becomes anything that can increase the likelihood of three failures. And those three failures are when we talk about an introduction of a virus or bacteria into a herd, it's going to get there on a carrying agent of some sort. We call those a pathogen carrying agent. So that might be a person, it might be a vehicle, it might be feed, it might be semen, it might even be a pig. So a pig can be infected by PRRS virus. If we move that pig to the farm, it becomes the pathogen carrying agent. And so we look in terms of hazards then are, again, anything that can increase the probability of those three failures, being the first failure being that the pig gets it or any other carrying agent, person or vehicle can get contaminated or infected. That's the first failure. Second failure is there's a failure to mitigate that. So we don't do anything about it. We don't either decontaminate it or we don't, in the case of a gilt, we would market that gilt instead of sending it to the farm. Lots of different ways we can mitigate the first failure. The second, third failure then is once that pathogen carrying agent shows up at the farm. So that would happen, say, for example, if semen's delivered to the farm. If we get semen that's contaminated with PRRS virus, remains contaminated with PRRS virus when it gets to the farm, if we're not doing a test and hold or anything like that, it may enter the farm and get used in a gilt to breeder. And then now we've got an outbreak in that farm. Okay, and so all three of those failures then occurred. And so when we look for hazards, we look at things, well, what may have contributed to the contamination of the semen in the first place? And so that takes us back to the Borstedt. What may have contributed to the failure to mitigate that? Well, that takes us to the testing strategy and the hold, test and hold strategy that they may or may not have, right? And so you may have a sense for this already that what we're looking at are the production processes, right? It's I used to describe it as the details of the production processes. It's who does them, when do they get done, how do they get done, the who, what, when, where, and how, okay? And we've looked at that probably a little bit more in a slightly different way now, Tara. And I'll give a shout out to one of your former colleagues, Kate Dyan, now is working with me, working on her postdoc, or working on her doctorate, I should say, as a postdoc at Iowa State. And, you know, she kind of helped me clarify this. I would say we think in terms of the different aspects of the production process. And of course, typically when you do that, Tara, my guess is the first thing that popped in your mind would be the operational procedures, right? How we do things, who does them, when do they do them? And that's probably the most important part. But the other parts, the other aspects around that are what we call the structural. And so that's the layout of the barn. It may be the layout of the site, how the barn's designed. And so, for example, if we ask, you know, people, we tell them, you know, here's what you need to do to get pigs, dead pigs out the door without crossing a line of separation there at the threshold. But we have a barn where the inside and outside are level at that door. And you've got three sows you need to get out that door that day. Good luck getting them out there without violating that line of separation, right? And so those structural aspects oftentimes weigh heavily on how people can get things done, or how we, you know, a disconnect, let's say, between what we expect or how we think they should do it and what they actually do. The third aspect that we looked at is the resources. And so going back to that dead disposal, if we tell them, you know, every dead sow needs to go out this door and only this door, but we have a building that extends for a quarter mile and you have a sow that dies on the other end of that, and you don't give them anything to get that sow from one end of that barn to the other, how likely is it that they're going to be able to do that, right? And so those are the physical resources. Other resources, though, are training, right? Do they even know what they're supposed to do? That's a resource, right? Or are they motivated to do what they need to do? So we look at all three of those aspects, the operational procedures. That's really the who, when, and what are they doing? Who, when, and how. And then the resources we look at is kind of the what they're doing it with, and the structural is where are they doing it, right? And we look at all three of those aspects, and the hazards, that's where they hide, right? They're either in the structural, they're either in or the operational procedures, or they're in the resources, or some combination of those, right? All three of those interact together. We may have the best operational procedures in the world, but we have a building where it's impossible to get them done correctly, right? And so we look at all three of those aspects and try to assess those. The way we do that using the web application is the web application. If you just pop it up there and start looking at it, you say, well, this is a form. It looks like a survey, right? It's not a survey. In fact, we use the term form. Sorry, I shouldn't use that one first. We prefer the term form. But you know, early on, and this is my experience with PADRAP, I firmly believe today, Terry, you'll never come up with a survey where you can include everything you'll ever run across, right? Not even remotely close. Reality is stranger than fiction. That happens on pig, that applies to pig farms too. And so the good stuff is in the details that you get at with open-ended discussion. So the form is intended to guide you through an open-ended discussion and think about all those things we've been talking about, right? And so really the way we do these is, you know, we start working our way through the form, and it's organized by what we call entry events. So entry of semen is first, and then entry of guilt is second, and then we keep following that same order. You know, entry of employees, we'll eventually get to that, and all those things, they're there in the form so we don't forget them. And then the questions, the closed-ended questions that are in there about that, remind us to ask questions about specific parts of the production process, right? And so that's really the intention there. And then as we have that open-ended discussion, we're getting the information we need to answer the closed-ended questions, but we never read those, right? We just plug the information in as they give it to us. And so the way, there's kind of an art to doing these. It's going to take, I think, veterinarians some practice to get good at these. But, you know, the way I do them, I start with very general open-ended questions. So I just tell me how you do that. Maybe we're talking about dead removal. I may say, tell me how you get dead pigs and dead sows out the door. Okay. And I just let them tell me what they do. And then, you know, if they don't sort of mention a clean, dirty line at all, I'll ask them, well, you know, when you get them to the door, you know, are you trying to do anything specific there, right? And I'm trying to get them to say, yes, we have a clean, dirty line there. But, you know, I try not to guide them, but I try to give them room to talk. But eventually, if they don't ever mention a line of separation there or any indicate they're falling, I'll ask directly, you know, so you don't have a line of separation, or I'll say, do you have a line of separation there? And typically, if they don't know what that means, then I'll explain to them. But we go from the open or from the general to the more specific until we feel like we've got a good handle on what they're doing there. And of course, by being on the farm when we're doing the actual investigation, you know, we can see for ourselves some of the things and look at the structural aspects in particular. I see a lot of, you know, there's a lot of things you can learn there just by seeing it, right? So like, for example, a good one is mixing up disinfectants, right? And so I'll ask them, you know, what do you use for a disinfectant and what concentration? So maybe they'll say, well, we use this disinfectant at 1 to 64. And then I'll ask, how do you mix that up, right? And my expectation is they're going to be able to tell me something about how many ounces per gallon of water or something in those terms. But you'd be surprised how often they can't do that, right? And so they may know the right concentration, but they don't know how to mix it up at that right concentration. Or they're running it through a power washer afterwards, which dilutes it again, and they don't know that, right? And so you can unearth lots of things by sort of being there and then having that discussion at the same time.
Yeah, I have unearthed a lot of those things, is a good way to put it. But, you know, and maybe we used the disease investigation process when we would have a new break to help us learn about the areas that maybe weren't so secure, right? And because I worked in a large system, we often had other farms in the same area that we would then go back to and say, well, how do you do it? Is this secure here? And we would often find some holes, right, in either our process or the facility, like you mentioned. And so for us, we used it as a tool, not only just to investigate a new break or a new introduction, but also to go back and to understand our system and what maybe we could do better in other farms and other areas. So let's say a practitioner is using this form and going through the process. How do we get the industry to benchmark with each other using this information? And so I envision your web-based tool is going to get that for us, and I haven't used it yet, so I'm excited to do that. So how do we do that as an industry? What's the next step?
Yeah, that's really where we're headed with this, Tara. And we don't, I'll confess, we don't have enough data in the system yet to be able to start, really digging into that. But my expectation, my hope is that, you know, we'll relatively soon get enough information in there so we can start to say things along the lines of, you know, these entry events. Maybe it's repair events done inside the barn. These come up very frequently, right? Or maybe it's employee entry. And so one of the things that we're going to be able to use is what we call an entry event hazard rating. And these are done by the whoever's doing the investigation, and they are somewhat subjective. So it's not going to be a perfect measure, but it will give us a sense for when these investigations are done, where, in what areas, what entry events are the greatest concerns, right? Where are they finding the most significant hazards? And so the ones I've done using the old paper form that we used for many years, and I, you know, I've probably done over 70 over the last 10 years. You know, when we looked at that, we would find things like employee entry, coal saw removal, and repair events done inside the barns. Those were the three events that when we looked at it, we rated those high the most frequently. And employee entry was up there, I think, largely because of the frequency of that event. And if you count one employee per day and twice or three times, if they shower back in and out and back in again, when we try to plot the frequency of those events compared to everything else that happens on a farm, it creates a chart that has employee entry way up here, and then everything else is just a small line at the bottom. You can't put them on the same chart. That's the difference in scale of the frequency. And so employee entry was something that, you know, when I, especially early on, started looking at this, and you walk in, you know, and it wasn't uncommon to find towels on the dirty side of the shower. The showers are filthy and there's no bench and, you know, on and on and on. And you think, okay, this is the last line of defense. If an employee comes in with something on their hands or their hair or whatever, we're really putting a lot of pressure on the shower. And I was never very impressed by the way the showers looked, right? And so early on, we had a lot of issues with that. And I would say as an industry, we just in the last 5 to 10 years, we've made some big advancements in that area. Showers tend to be a lot cleaner. They've got benches and, you know, there's some additional layers there now. And so, you know, probably don't rate employee entry as high as we used to, but still call removal, still one that you see a lot of problems with, especially the loadout areas or those, you know, if they're using a staged loading room, even if, you know, those, I have seen very few of those that are designed well to actually reduce biosecurity hazards. Oftentimes, it ends up creating more hazards because they design that room so that it slopes back towards a barn. That's a common thing to do. And so, you know, you come in there, you got to transition that room from dirty back to clean. They often use a power washer and disinfect to do that. Well, they're, you know, anything, any contamination that might've gotten in that room gets flushed back into the barn. You couldn't make that worse if you tried, right? But But, you know, at that point, because of the structural problems you've got there, the design of that room sloping back into the towards the barn, you know, it's good luck finding some operational procedures that will reduce that hazard, right? And so those are the kinds of things, you know, that we see frequently there and try to dig into, you know, and ask questions about as well. Just, you know, say, you know, when you power wash that, where does that water go? Do you see it flush back into the barn? And they're like, well, yeah, that happens, right? So.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where the procedural processes are almost impossible to make it better, right? If it's a mm-hmm. facility issue. That's a bit of a juxtaposition, but that still shows us that next time we build a barn or design a loadout, perhaps having those thoughts in mind would be better suited. And that's communication, right? With those different areas of expertise. Yeah. So,
I was going to say, one of my favorite pastimes now is asking veterinarians, have you ever been asked to help out in the design of a new barn or remodel? And I found very few that had been asked, right? They admit that those barns get designed by people who have no idea about biosecurity. So, and that's very evident when you start looking.
Yeah. And that's an area of opportunity, right, for our industry. And I think as we think about, you mentioned, you know, influenza, right? Those are some areas that we probably need to be working in that space and communicating with our teams a little bit differently. So we're going to kind of wrap up today. So we don't have the ability to show a slide, right? So give us a quick review. How can we get to this tool through the SHIC website, or how would we go about looking for it? And I'll put a link onto our SwineNet group as well, so we can try to lead everybody there.
Yeah. So very simply, you can send us an email at SOIP. So Standardized Outbreak Investigation Program. So just SOIP at iastate.edu. And if you forget that or forget where the link is, Tara, if the audience wants to find that, it is also on the SHIC website. So you can find it out there.
Perfect. Great.
And so what will happen after you send that then is we take the first step. We'll set up a company for you if there's not, if somebody else hasn't already requested that you're unaware of. And we'll set up the company, set you up as a company administrator. We do have some terms and condition that somebody will have to sign for the company. And then once that's done, you'll get access to it. You can set up other individuals in the company to get access as well. So you can take it from there.
Okay, great. And or you could do it as a vet clinic, right? As opposed to a production company.
Yes. A vet clinic can do it too. That's an issue we just had to work through, Tara, whether or not we could agree or allow vet clinics to set up if they have several smaller customer clients, if they could set those up under a single entity of their vet practice. And we are going to try to allow them to do that. So there are some issues that came up around that we had to sort through, but I think we can get that done. So.
Perfect. Great. And as we talked about before, you know, this isn't specific to veterinarians, you know, key production individuals, you know, anybody that has an interest in biosecurity and improving, learning about what hazards are and control measures, get in there and take a look. There's in the SHIC website, I know there's a bit of a training program you can go through to learn about how to do this as a systematic process. So I encourage people to take a look at that as well.
Yeah, that's currently being updated, Tara, too. So we'll have some new training material out there here in a little bit. So
it's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Fortiva, creating ingredients for impact to support animal resilience and health. Learn more at fortivaimpact.com. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions. Trow Nutrition North America, everything we do is driven by passion and backed by science. Essential Ag Solutions, bringing innovative science-based solutions to livestock producers. Keys Manufacturing is America's number one source for cheese meal and dairy powders for your feed. Check us out at keysmanufacturing.com. We have a time and labor-saving product for you. AgriSlats by Healthy Farms is your solution. No more lugging jugs around the barn every month.
With AgriSlats, you simply drop the slat through the floor twice a year, and it works to break down solids, reduces crusting and forming. To learn more, visit myhealthyfarms.com.
Market growth. The Pork Checkoff is building a bigger appetite for pork. Today's marketing efforts are not just about selling more pork, but creating long-term demand. The National Pork Board is finding new ways to reach and engage with multicultural consumers and younger generations by leading with taste and flavor. Visit porkcheckoff.org to learn more about building a bigger appetite for pork.
Appreciate all of your work on that area through the years. And we're going to end here with our final three questions that we ask all of our guests as we wrap up. So to get to know you a little bit better and maybe to give some advice for us to go out and identify a resource or a book, what's your favorite book or resource that you use in your area of expertise?
Okay. I had prepared to answer. I prefer to read outside of my area of expertise, Tara.
Well, that's good. That's the next question. So don't jump ahead.
and to be honest, it's been quite a while since I've read a book with, about biosecurity. I've got a bookshelf in my office that's full of books. I've even got some books and old notes from when I was in vet school in the late 1990s, and I just don't use them anymore. You know, if I need information, it's typically Google or, I'll pull on journal articles and read those. So I don't even have a good book within my area of expertise to recommend to you, Tara.
So we'll use the website that you've recently created as the resource in your area of expertise. How about that?
All right, that works. Now with AI, I don't know if you've experimented with that, but I've started experimenting with that. Oh my goodness, that is another level of getting access to information. So it's not perfect yet, but I'm a natural skeptic, Tara, but what I've seen so far, it's pretty impressive. I think it's going to change how we do things.
Yeah, I think so too. So how about a resource outside of vet med and epidemiology, resource or book or movie? Can be anything.
Yeah, I'm going to confess I'm kind of a geek there. I like reading about history and politics and the theory of economic thought and those types of things. And so it took me a while to get through, but I recently read all the way through the Federalist Papers. And I don't recommend trying to do that in one sitting, but it is really interesting to me to sort of be able to go through back in time, so to speak, and see the things that they were worried about, right, as they were forming our country, and to see how some of those things have not gone away. They're still here, and even some things that they thought, well, these, you know, we're gonna form the government or form the, you know, we'll have this branch of government that will do this and have these constraints on it, and so that will prevent these problems. And it's interesting to see how, in some ways, it didn't really work very well, right? We have those problems today. And so, yes, that was the most recent book I read. And that's the type of things I guess I read in for leisure, let's say.
Yeah, that's interesting. As we're in a kind of state of turmoil politically, both, internationally and domestically. And so that would be interesting in the big scope to go back and visit. So the last one is very, very much to get to know, you and your thoughts. And so that's share with us an attribute or characteristic that you feel sets successful professionals apart from others.
Yeah, I don't know that I could nail down one, but there is one I think is very important. I would say it's, been important for me. And that is, to when you build things that are new, right? Or when you're trying to create something that maybe hasn't, no one's out created before, or, it can be a program, or it can be even a group that you're trying to pull together to meet around some subject. The older I get, the more I realize you have to be able to find ways that are wins for everybody that's involved, right? And so I think everybody has a tendency, like I do, to say yes to these things. If you get invited to join a group or be part of developing something or part of a program. But the reality is that unless they're getting something out of it, they're not going to put a lot of effort. It's going to quickly move down the priority chain, right, or their list of priorities. And so for me, that's been always something that every time I think about doing something new, I think about, okay, well, you know, who are the people that are going to be involved in this, and what do they what should they, or what can they expect to get out of it, right? And so trying to find those wins, I think, are important. And you know, that can head off a lot of problems down the road too. If you're doing something where you're depending on a certain group of individuals, or even a single individual, if you don't have them fully on board and recognizing what they're getting out of it too, it's just not gonna work. So, but I wouldn't say that that's the only attribute to error, but that's one that I probably ended up focusing a lot on here in my recent work here.
And I think that's important, because you can get invited to a lot of groups and different, you know, pulled a lot of different ways. And so, you know, either understanding, is this right for me, and what am I going to get value out of my time, is probably really good to stop and sit back and think about. Because I'm a learner, and I can say, well, I'll learn something no matter what. But in the course of a day, you do have to prioritize, because, like you said, you won't have enough time for it otherwise. So. Right. Really interesting thought. Well, great. Thank you so much for sharing your new process and product that you guys have been working on and in the area of biosecurity. Again, this is Dr. Daryl Holkamp with Iowa State University, and thanks for joining us.
All right. Thank you, Tara. Great to hear from you again, too.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.